Okay, hi, good morning everyone, and thank you all so much for being here with us this morning. Thank you to Ray for moderating this session, as well as my fellow presenters this morning. And again, my name is Darcy Allen. I am a technical analyst for Obstetric Fischle with the United Nations Population Fund based in New York City. And within the United Nations Population Fund, we've established a global campaign to end fischle along with close to 100 global partners, I think some of whom are here in the room this morning. And again, the title of the presentation is That No Woman or Girl Slip Through the Cracks, Establishing Obstetric Fischle as a Notifiable Condition. So continuing on the theme of obstetric fischle this morning, but really focusing in this presentation on some advocacy and policy work that's currently being done. And I'll begin by saying that I have no relationships to disclose for this presentation. And then also I would just like to begin with a quick outline of what I intend to cover in my presentation. Within this presentation, I do have some information on the definition of obstetric fischle and some key information. And Allison's presentation very helpfully and did a very good job of covering that, so I won't spend too much time on that. But then I'll also just give a few key facts on the current prevalence and incidence of fischle. And then I'd like to go into a brief overview of what we at UNFPA and also with the campaign to end fischle are currently doing within the goal to end fischle globally. And then once I've provided that background, I'll move on to the main topic of the establishment of obstetric fischle as a nationally notifiable condition. And so really how this came about and what has been done so far and what needs to be done going forward. And so again, as I said, Allison gave a very wonderful overview of what obstetric fischle is, how it's caused, and what are the consequences for women with fischle. I would just really like to highlight in this slide that obstetric fischle is primarily an issue for women who are living in very poor, often rural or remote areas geographically. These are areas in the developing world primarily. So it's not an issue that, for the most part, is an issue within the United States here, within the rest of the developed world. And often, when I mention to people just in my daily life that I work in obstetric fischle, they most likely haven't heard of what it is or don't know much about it, and primarily for that fact that it isn't something that we deal with here. But it is a very devastating issue, as Allison highlighted, for women in many developing parts of the world. And so again, the geographic representation of fischle is mostly in developing countries and primarily in the very poor communities of these countries. The UN estimates that there are currently about 2 million women and girls living with fischle today, and that an estimated about 50 to 100,000 new cases develop each year. But I just want to say with these numbers that it has been acknowledged that these are not exact figures, that they could definitely be strengthened and more could be done to help or to develop more up-to-date and more precise figures on the incidence and prevalence. And so there are efforts that are currently being done to strengthen the data on incidence and prevalence. But when you look at the next figure on the slide, which is that around 20,000 surgeries to repair fischle are currently being done each year, and you look at the numbers above, it's clear that only about 1% of women with fischle are receiving the surgical repair that they need each year. And at this rate, that means that women who have fischle today or who will develop it in their lifetime, will most of them will live the rest of their lives with fistula without ever receiving care and treatment that they need. Excuse me, I just wanted to highlight too that on this slide I have a screenshot of what's called the Global Fistula Map. And this is one effort that's currently being done. It's been spearheaded by Direct Relief International, along with input from us at UNFPA and as well as the Fistula Foundation, to look at where the surgeries are currently being done across the world. And this is one effort that's really taking that up-to-date and real-time information and putting it in a format like this. And I think my colleague Jen Lemberger might be in the audience here. Yes, so you should all check out Jen's presentation tomorrow that goes more into the Global Fistula Map and GIS for mapping fistula surgeries. But so, as I said in the last slide, at the current rate that surgeries are currently being performed, that it means that most women who do have fistula will live the rest of their lives without ever receiving care and treatment and surgery. And we at UNFPA, as well as our partners in the Campaign to End Fistula, believe that this should not be the case. We know that there is surgery available to repair a fistula, and that we believe that every woman who does develop fistula should be connected with the surgery and the support and the care that they need. And the Campaign to End Fistula was founded in 2003 by UNFPA with our partners. And today, it's active in about 50 countries worldwide with a global presence of around 100 partners. And the mission of the campaign is to make fistula as rare in developing nations as it is in developed nations. As I said, it's primarily and largely not an issue that exists today, for example, in the United States. And we would like that to be the case worldwide. And the way that we do that is by focusing on a few key strategies and interventions. This includes prevention. We heard before about skilled birth attendants and the importance of that during childbirth, but also access to emergency obstetric care. So if complications do arise during childbirth, that women are able to get that cesarean section or the other support that they need to for them and their babies to be safe and well during the process. And then also, as Allison highlighted in her presentation, the social reintegration and follow-up of survivors so that after they receive treatment, that they're not just sent out into the world and told, okay, good luck, thanks for coming by, but they're given the livelihoods training and support that they need to support themselves economically, and they're also given the psychosocial support they need to really empower themselves and be well. And so now that I've given that background, I would like to discuss briefly the topic of establishing fistula as a nationally notifiable condition. And again, this topic came about as a topic of importance through the awareness that currently, there's no standardization and no standard system for recording and tracking cases of fistula, either at the national level or at the international level. And so it really varies between country and country how and even if fistula cases are being reported and recorded at the community level, at the facility level, and then up to the national level. But it's not a standardized process across, or a standardized process globally. And really, there's the belief that by making this a standard process, by establishing fistula as a nationally notifiable condition, that this is a very important component in the overall process and efforts toward ending fistula globally. And making fistula a nationally notifiable condition means that all cases of fistula will be identified, reported, and tracked. and that this will be done in a process that prioritizes the rights and dignity and privacy of the women involved. And that as this is done, and as Fishla is established as a nationally notifiable condition, this will lead to more women receiving the quality surgery that they so desperately need. And again, it will lead to the increased follow-up of women after surgery so that they receive the ongoing care and support that they need, including medical support if and when they do become pregnant again, as well as psychosocial and social reintegration services. And lastly, that this will lead to strengthening of the data on incidence and prevalence. Again, I mentioned earlier that the figures that we have are currently being worked on to be strengthened and updated, and this will help in that process. And so on this slide, I just wanted to highlight that the establishment of fistula as a nationally notifiable condition is an idea and an activity that, for the most part, the global fistula community has agreed that this is an important and needed component in the overall goal of ending fistula. And I just wanted to say that it's come up time and again over the past recent years, that and mostly at global meetings that are focusing on obstetric fistula, its prevention and treatment, that this is a really necessary component, including highlights of the creation of an international registry of fistula cases, as well as registries at the national level. Again, the idea that it's really necessary to strengthen the data on prevalence and incidence that we currently have on fistula cases, as well as conduct ongoing monitoring of these cases, again, primarily for the support of these women to make sure they're being connected to the services they need, both when they have fistula, but for the rest of their lives as well. And just wanted to highlight a quote that I included on the slide here that was from a participant at one of these meetings that says, quote, "What is not counted does not count." So really highlighting that when fistula is given priority at the national policy level, that this will then lead to women with fistula being prioritized and their issues being brought to the forefront. And so far, for us at UNFPA, this has been a process that we've been developing and working on for about the past year. And so, as I said, we saw that this is really an issue that's of importance within the global fistula community. And with us at UNFPA and within the UN system, we made it our first effort to advocate for the buy-in and support of policymakers at the global and national levels to agree that this is an important step that needs to be taken. And the first step that happened was that in 2014, we advocated for the inclusion of a recommendation on establishing fistula as a nationally notifiable condition within a report of the United Nations Secretary General, a report on strengthening efforts to end obstructive fistula. And then following this report, there was a resolution that was passed at the end of 2014 by the United Nations General Assembly that was also supported by over 150 member states, that all these 150 member states agreed that within countries where fistula is prevalent, that this is something that needs to be recorded and tracked in order to provide the overall support to women with fistula. And in addition to these advocacy efforts on the global scale, we've also been initiating initial consultations both internally with different experts on specific topics of human rights, women's health issues, maternal health issues, as well as external partners, including WHO, as well as other partners who work specifically in the field of fishla. And so as I mentioned, this is something that we've really just been working on within the last year. We're still at the primarily beginning phases of this process, and we do acknowledge that this is an ongoing process of establishing fishla as a nationally notifiable condition. But we've laid out some groundwork for the next year going forward, which will include conducting a stakeholders meeting to really get the consensus of all the key players who are involved in this process to establish what this will look like and agree on what this will look like, as well as gathering recommendations for how to move forward. And then the additional step will be to create guidelines for countries to be able to use in this process to then disseminate to countries for the process of how this will look of establishing fishla as a nationally notifiable condition. And also to support countries in the implementation of this process, so not just to hand them the guidelines, but also to support them in the process and make sure they're successful in doing so. And again, I just want to end by saying that this is a component that we've seen as being very important to the overall goal of ending fishla, getting fishla globally. And I just wanted to highlight the photo that I included on this slide. It's of a 76-year-old woman in South Sudan who received surgery for fishla after living with fishla for nearly 60 years. And we certainly think that this is not something that should be happening to any woman. We think it's wonderful that she was able to receive the surgery, but she certainly shouldn't have had to live 60 years of her life with fishla, with this condition and all of the related effects. And we believe that this establishment of fishla as a nationally notifiable condition is an important step in moving forward to this not being a reality for any woman going forward. Thank you so much.
I know a lot more about the fistula issue than I did an hour ago. And I know a lot more about this phenomenon that I'd heard about and was very amazed about, women delivering all by themselves, than I knew an hour ago, too. We have about 15 minutes for Q&A or observations. I don't see. How far does this mic go? Okay, can you stand up, introduce yourself, name, that's enough, and your question or observation. If it's for a particular presenter, please say that. If it's general, you don't have to designate anybody. And I think, ladies, you'll have to come to the mic to respond. Okay, ma'am?
My name is Julie Hendrick, I'm with Gold Vision, and my question is for Allison. I'm wondering if you saw a correlation between the amount of time women live with an unrepaired fistula and their psychosocial effects, and if that's something that you'll be looking at in the future in terms of how quickly fistulas are repaired and the effects that that has on reintegration into either community life or for younger women into education.
Yeah, thank you for that question. Indeed, we did see a correlation between the length of time that a woman was living with fistula and the psychosocial effects of the fistula, although within our qualitative data on 30 people, we weren't able to explore that, quantitatively, but what we're hoping to do with the longitudinal cohort following over over 12 months is to look at the length of time to recovery, to resolution of depression, anxiety, and experience of and self-esteem. So that's definitely something that we will have information on within probably the next year. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, good morning. Edward Mugoluka, I'm from South Sudan. I relate to the June session very much. I'm currently a student of the I just had an observation and a question. One is that the most of the focus on Fistula is actually on the outcome of a very poor health infrastructure in most of those countries. And there's no advocacy to make sure that the countries improve their budget for health. For example, in South Sudan, it's less than 4% or even 2% of the national budget for health. So you will be able to expect all of these nasty outcomes that is happening. Secondly, the campaign in South Sudan is talking mainly about the treatment for people, the surgery. But I noticed that it's being done in the form of a campaign, for example, one surgery every 6 months or even once a year. And we know that the fistula gets worse if it's not immediately repaired. So there are issues with notification. Like if a person is in a village, it may be 6 months before even it's reported that she has any fistula, or she comes out that she has fistula because of all those things. So how do you, as a community, ensure that government own their responsibility to make sure the preventing aspects are taken care of very seriously? And secondly, the surgeons, the doctors who are trained in the hospital are now depending on the campaign to do the surgery. But if they were able to identify the fistula quickly and do the surgery even without any PA campaign, I think that will solve the issue. But they are waiting for 6 months, even if there is a fistula patient in the hospital, until the PA comes and do a campaign and pay them to do the surgery. I think this is the issue. Thank you.
I think that's yours, Darcy.
Hello, and thank you so much for giving your perspective on that, from being from South Sudan and being able to see it firsthand. And so your first question, I think, touched on how do we, as UNFPA and within the UN, support governments to prioritize fistula within their national health strategies. And I don't think it's something that has a simple and short answer to that, but it is something that, for example, I mentioned the resolution that was passed in the General Assembly, where 150 countries acknowledged that efforts do need to be intensified for preventing and treating obstructing fistula, and there was a list of recommendations that they all supported. But that being said, there's no mechanism in place to hold them accountable for that, for saying, okay, you signed on and agreed to this resolution where you said that this is something that's important to you, so now how are you going to do that? So it is something that we handle in many different ways through advocacy efforts at the global level, as well as at the national level with our country office in South Sudan, and really, but continuously advocating that this is an issue of importance that cannot be ignored. It cannot go back to its neglected status as it once was. And then on your issue, I think what you had mentioned, and I didn't highlight that in my presentation, but that in many countries or regions there, the repairs of fistula are being done in what's called a campaign or camp. So it's not necessarily that a woman goes to a hospital and she's being able to be scheduled for appointment right that day, but that surgeons and the surgical team will get together a few times a year to perform surgeries for a group of women. And that is something that with us as the campaign to end FISHLA, we want to move away from that model of doing the campaigns and to have a more more ongoing system integrated into the health systems of being able to provide support and provide the surgery for women. But it is based on the context and what's happening in the country at that moment. And so for South Sudan, it's I think it's what's happening right now is primarily the camps, but we're hoping to move away from that model eventually to a more a stronger and more ongoing model for that. So, thank you.
In the back.
Thank you. So the participants in our qualitative research were all women who had had surgery 6 to 24 months previously, and the requirement, so the eligibility criteria for entering into the longitudinal component was at the time of surgery because we needed to have a baseline measure. So we are not engaging with those women again. We may in the future if the opportunity arises, but the work that we're currently doing is with following women from the time of surgery through 12 months post-surgery. And like I said, we've been doing this over mobile phone, which has been very successful. And in fact, I think what we'll end up finding is that the mobile data collection has been a source of support for these women. Because even though our research coordinator, who is the woman that is calling them and talking with them every time, is not a medical professional, this is an opportunity. They feel that they're being cared for and followed up on by the hospital, and that's been really meaningful to them. Thank you.
Okay, in the front here, and then the woman with the red.
My question is to Dr. Fakonga. I wanted to talk or maybe comment on the difference in outcomes between the women who deliver in the absence of anyone and the people who deliver without any skills and standards. And I wanted to relate that to the outcomes that we look in the study, because I was looking at what really the difference in outcomes for them. We just think that didn't have any skills professional.
Of course, you saw that in the bivalent. Thank you, sir. In the bivalent relationship, we did see that, for instance, when you look at age, you see that the women who were younger were less likely to deliver with no 1%. But when you look at the people delivering at home with somebody, that it increases. I mean, it decreases by age, which means it's much, you know. So we see that difference. And then when you look at those risky processes also, you see that for women to deliver with no one present, that women, I mean, younger women, I mean, older women. Let's just quickly look at this, so that we're not talking abstract terms.
Yeah, not too much.
Okay. All right.